All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good, but I feel like the world is bad.
Yes, so you might feel that way because it is.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. That's what I also
am. Because it is bad.
I'm like, oh, the world's bad now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not, I don't feel like, and I know maybe everyone feels this way, but I feel like everyone goes through a time in their life when they go, oh, the world is bad, and they realize it for the first time. And then usually the world isn't as bad as they think, but I think the world is as bad as I think.
Yeah, I'm really starting to suspect that from this last year.
Yeah.
Seeing yeah. what humans do.
Yeah. This is what, let's just talk about it. The coup.
The coup.
Let's talk about
so
the coup.
So there was a coup.
So there was a coup. Not a really good one.
No,
like,
it was an attempt.
They didn't plan super good.
No.
But, this is what really gets me. Everyone's like, wow, who could have seen it coming? Who could have imagined that Donald Trump would be willing to go this far? And I'm like, I don't know.
He said, stand back and stand by.
Also, let's just like, it's 2016. He's running for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
He was breaking laws day one. And we said, well, yeah, he's breaking the law. But, like, who cares? It's just the law.
Also, he's always broken the law.
He's always broken the law.
It's Donald
Trump. Donald Trump is literally wrote a book where the book should have been called How to Get Rich While Breaking the Law. And his entire strategy is break the law, then throw a lot of money at it when people try to stop you from breaking the law, and eventually those people will go bankrupt because you're far richer than them originally.
So, and, yeah, deny the allegations, but then turn it back on them.
Yes, exactly. Ruin them twofold if they want to punish you for ruining them the first time.
Yes.
So, he wrote a book on that. It's called The Art of the Deal. You can pick it up. But then, like, his election, he was, you know, he was funneling money from his business into his election, which is illegal.
Yeah.
Then he was, and then he became the president. And we didn't stop him from doing that. And then we went, oh, he's supposed to get rid of his businesses. And he said, no. And we said, okay. And then he said, not only am I not going to get rid of my businesses, I'm going to actively use my businesses to sell official presidential merchandise.
MAGA!
I'm going to use my businesses. I'm going to force the Secret Service to stay at my businesses, and not only stay there, but pay to stay there whenever I decide to go on vacation, which is a lot.
Jesus Christ.
And all of that's illegal, but we said, I don't care. Because, well, some people cared, but unfortunately, the people that cared don't actually have any political power because, unfortunately, they were too short in the Senate.
Yeah.
So, that's good. That's a good way to run a country,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, this is so in the best interest of everyone, the way they're running things right now.
And then he was, not only were a lot of his cabinet members charged and now are serving terms in federal prison for making Russia actively interfere in our election, but then he himself was impeached on having Russia interfere in our next election by asking them to try and find dirt and or create dirt on Joe Biden and or his family, which is illegal. And then he was impeached, but unfortunately the Senate, because again, they're too short, didn't actually move forward on that impeachment. And so he wasn't in trouble again.
What a great way to make decisions.
And then finally, approximately 1 week before he leaves, he tried to stage a coup.
Yeah, he was encouraging people who, or, you know, as he's been dropping little breadcrumbs, leading people to this idea of a coup. And then, you know, they found it, and the witch's candy house, as you would say,
yeah,
of the coup.
Exactly. And they gobbled it right up.
They really did. They just went for it, and then he went on Twitter and said that they're patriots.
And he said, I love you.
And you're all very special.
And, now, all the Republicans are trying to backpedal, minus Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, of course.
Of course.
All the other Republicans are trying
Trump's
to backpedal.
Bitches.
Yeah, literally. Remember when Donald Trump said Ted Cruz's wife was ugly?
Okay. He's still standing by him.
Okay.
Ted, he called your wife ugly. He made everyone think you're the
Zodiac killer.
Ted,
everyone thought you were the literal Zodiac killer. Okay, buddy. I don't know if this is the guy. I mean, Josh Hawley, I get it.
Is
he's
this
a little.
This is a guy you really want to hang your horse on?
Josh Hawley is a little bitch boy who's going nowhere, so, like, he's trying to get something, right? But, like, Ted Cruz, you, like, ran for the president, okay? Mm-hmm. And I mean, not successfully or well, but still.
You tried.
You tried. And, like, that, you have that, and now you're just Trump's little bitch boy who, and you have to go home to your wife every night, and she's probably she's like,
he called me ugly.
And you're like, I know, honey, but, like, my Senate seat. And then, also, all these other Republicans and news outlets and everyone are trying to backpedal and be like, whoa, we didn't want this exact thing we asked for.
We never saw this coming.
They're like, hey, I know we asked for this exact thing, but I didn't want it to happen. It feels like Kevin McAllister in Home Alone when he wishes his family was gone, and then they are gone.
And he's sad.
Like, and he's like, what? I didn't want my family to be gone. And it's like, well, too bad, Kevy.
That's what you asked for.
Too bad, Kevy. That's what I feel like.
Yeah.
And now, like, even, like, Mike Pence, and now they're also insane. It's
I know.
Too late.
It's too late. It's too late.
Democracy is crumbling.
What my Ben and, Kissel, one of the hosts of last podcast on this left, said that taking away Trump's Twitter account is like giving CPR to a skeleton.
I agree with that. I agree with that. 100%.
Yeah.
Because it's true.
It is.
And here's the thing. It's like, they think they're doing something smart. And I guess they are, because apparently a lot of Americans are way dumber than I thought. But here's the thing. It's like, I'm sorry, news outlets. I'm sorry, everyone. This whole, like, performative anti-Trumpism is absolutely killing me. Literally, where has that been for the last 4 years? Last 4 years, you have been nothing but broadcasting him day and night, 24/7, being like, oh my god, we cannot take... And Democrats, too. I'm talking to you, too, Democrats in the Senate and House.
And now you're like, we're gonna show him because he's telling lies. He's always been telling lies!
Yeah, literally since day one. All of this is because of all of you. All of you have refused to hold him accountable the entire time. All of you have been doing nothing but giving him 24-hour news coverage all the time. And now that you know he's going to be gone, and you know that your money doesn't depend on it anymore, you feel like you can finally stand up to him. But it's like, you know, it's like this, I truly believe that this is how 90% of Republicans have felt this whole time. Most Republicans in the House and Senate probably have hated him this whole time, have never wanted to do what he says, but they don't care. They don't care about what's good for democracy. They don't care about what's good for them. They don't care about what's ethical. They don't care about anything. They care about getting reelected, and the way to get reelected is to support Donald Trump outwardly, no matter what he does. And the way to keep power in your party is to not let your president get impeached. And here's the thing now. We're about to see, I love the history books. The history books are going to be like, the first president to ever flee prosecution in the United States. The first president to ever... Not only, here's my theory. I have two theories. He's not going to the impeachment. One, because either there's going to be another staged coup and a possible assassination attempt of either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. Or the alternative option is that at that time, he's going to be fleeing the country because as soon as he's not the president,
they're going to arrest him.
They're going to arrest him.
For a myriad of things.
For so many crimes. I mean, I think the people in Georgia are probably what's going to end up getting him.
Yeah.
That phone call where he's actively being like, change the votes, find the votes. And it's like, buddy.
Buddy. Stupid.
But I don't think he's going to go to jail. I think he's going to literally, flee the country.
He's going to flee, yeah.
He will, if anyone else is arrested before then, I have a feeling every single person that's being arrested right now who was at the coup is going to be pardoned by him as, like, his literal last act as president. And that's it. Even though he literally signed an executive order that would put all of those people in prison for 10 years, he's going to pardon all of them. And then not pardon any of
them. No, that only applies to relics of Civil War leaders on the southern side.
Yeah, that only applies to black people, actually.
Yeah.
And, like, white liberal girls. Everyone else, like, that doesn't actually apply to. Yeah, those people are insane. I don't think there's any salvaging it. I don't believe in I don't believe in unifying with fascists.
I don't either. I think it's one of those cases where, you know, the leg's infected. You just gotta cut it off.
I agree.
I really think that.
And
you just gotta shun him.
I think if you don't cut it off, your Joe Biden can never leave the White House ever again.
No, he's gonna be murdered.
Yeah. So he should stay at home.
Yeah. We love you, Joe.
I love you. Yeah, sorry, Joe. Sorry, Joe.
Sucks that things are going this way, doesn't it?
Trying to keep you safe? Don't leave the White House. I don't think that's a good idea for anyone. And I know that you're going to go, but I have to show the American... No, you don't. No, you don't. Stay at home. Okay? Bring the National Guard in. You just stay at home. because that's where you need to be. No one else. You don't need to be anywhere else. You can have people come to you. That's what I think. You're the president. You don't ever have to leave if you don't want to.
It's true. All right, so our 10 minutes of political ranting. We just wanted to get our opinions out there, as always.
You can quote us on any of this.
Yeah, any of that. I will stand by that in a court of law, any of what I just said.
Yeah, me too.
So today we are going to cover one of my favorite movies ever. I could watch this movie every day for the rest of my life and be fine.
Oh my goodness.
I love it. It's one of my faves. So today we're covering the 2013 Coen Brothers film Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yes. So sad.
So sad.
Stars.
Oscar Isaac.
Carey Mulligan.
John Goodman.
Garrett Hedlund.
Justin Timberlake and Adam Driver.
Yes. I wouldn't say Adam Driver stars, but he does
make an impression.
He has a role and he sits with you.
Yeah, he really does. Like, after the movie's over, you're like, Adam Driver's role.
Yeah, Adam Driver's role. That voice.
One of the most quotable lines in the entire movie.
Agreed.
Outer space!
Uh-oh. I love that song. I don't care.
It's a great song.
It's such a banger soundtrack.
This soundtrack is one of my favorites. I watched this movie. I rented it from Hastings when I was 15 years old.
I can't believe Hastings was still around when you were 15.
Yeah, and I took it home. They went out of business when I was almost 17, I think. So it was very towards the tail end. So I rented it and took it home and watched it alone. And then I downloaded the soundtrack, and I've had it ever since, because it's an amazing soundtrack.
So good.
So yeah, let's dive into this plot.
Okay, in February 1961, Llewyn Davis is a struggling folk singer in New York City's Greenwich Village. His recent solo album, Inside Llewyn Davis, is not selling.
Nope.
He has no money and is sleeping on the couches of friends and acquaintances.
When he goes to his agent's office and he's like, how are we doing? He's like, we're doing good.
And he's like,
really?
And he's like, we're not doing good. No.
Yeah, Cincinnati? I don't know where Cincinnati is. Oh, I have Cincinnati. Can you bring it here?
Do you want me to bring it in here? Yes. So
the Coen brothers have such a good sense of humor.
I know. It's always that, like, very, it's that very mundane humor.
Yeah, very much so.
Where you're like, oh my god. after playing the Gaslight Cafe, which is, by the way, hilariously named, considering...
Oh, it's a real place. Did you know that? Maybe it's the Gaslight. I think it's...
Let's look it up. The Gaslight Cafe was a coffee house in Greenwich Village. Wow.
Yeah, that's where Bob Dylan played his first couple of songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like in the movie.
And Allen Ginsberg.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, so it was a real place.
I think it's just really funny because, like, that is such that's an appropriately named cafe. That's so appropriate named cafe.
For this film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
After playing the Gaslight Cafe one night, he is beaten up in the alley behind the cafe for reasons not immediately apparent by a shadowy man in a hat with a southern accent and a suit.
We can just gather together that Llewyn had done something last night that had upset the man.
Yeah. So the first thing we get is like, oh, what the fuck is wrong with Llewyn?
Yeah, like, what's going on with Llewyn?
Davis awakens in the apartment of two friends, the Gorfines. As he leaves, their cat escapes and he is locked out of the apartment. Davis takes him to the apartment of Jim and Jean Berkeley.
Takes the cat.
Yeah, the cat. Where Jean reluctantly agrees to allow Davis to spend the night, despite already having promised as much to another aspiring folk singer / songwriter, Troy Nelson.
Jean is Carey Mulligan.
Yes. A young military man stationed at nearby Fort Dix. Mm-hmm. Jean informs Davis that she is pregnant and that Davis could be the father. The next morning, Davis opens a window and the Gorfine's cat escapes the Berkeley's apartment. Later, Jean asks Davis to pay for an abortion, though she is upset that it may be Jim's child she is losing. So, Jim is played by Justin Timberlake.
And she is married to him.
And she basically is like, oh, well, if it's his kid, I want to have it.
But if it's your kid, I don't want to have it because everything you touch turns to shit.
And there's really no way to know because this is 1961.
Yeah.
So, no paternity. And even then, you can't really get a paternity test until after the baby's born, so.
And also, I think you probably know which one it was when the baby came out because Llewyn and Justin Timberlake, Oscar Isaac and Justin Timberlake look very different.
Yeah. Davis visits his sister, hoping to borrow money. Instead, she gives him a box of his belongings, which he tells her to leave outside by the curb. She mentions he could make money by returning to the Merchant Marine. On Jim's invitation, Davis records a space travel-themed novelty song with Jim and Al Cody.
Al Cody's Adam Driver.
Yes.
Such a fun scene.
Yes. Needing money for the abortion, Davis agrees to an immediate $200 rather than royalties. Mm-hmm. Which is like, he doesn't really think the song is good, so he's
like, when they're playing it, he's like, well, who wrote this? And then Jim's like, well, I wrote it.
He's so mean.
He's so mean. Lewin is so mean. He's just so, such a broken person.
I know.
And like, it later becomes apparent why he's so mean.
And awful.
And awful.
In general.
But so, you just feel bad for the guy too, because his life sucks, because he's homeless.
Yeah. Davis looks to set up the appointment for the abortion, only to learn that payment won't be necessary, as he has a credit at the gynecologist's office due to having already paid for the same procedure 2 years earlier on behalf of another woman who did not go through with it or inform Davis of her decision to raise the child in her hometown of Akron, Ohio.
Imagine having an abortion credit.
Yeah. The doctor...
It looks like you have actually a credit, sir, for one abortion. Would you like to use that
today?
You
want to cash in?
You want to cash in that today?
I mean, it's funny, too. This is, like, another example of his homelessness just, like, being a source of so many problems.
Yes.
Because the doctor's like, well, we tried to contact you, like, 2 years ago, but we just couldn't get...
Yeah, like, where do you live?
Yeah.
And he doesn't live anywhere.
Or he would have had that money.
Yeah, and there's a really sad scene where, like, he is filling out the paperwork to get the money from the recording session, and he gets the address part, and he can't put anything
down. He's,
like,
leaves it blank, yeah.
It's sad.
So, while talking to Jean at a cafe, Davis sees what he believes to be the Gorfines' cat, captures him, and returns him to them that evening. Asked to perform a song after dinner, he reluctantly plays Fare Thee Well, a song he had recorded with his old partner, Mike.
It's a beautiful song.
Yes. When Mrs. Gorfine starts to sing Mike's harmony, Davis becomes very angry and tells her not to. She leaves the table crying, then returns with the cat, having realized it is the wrong sex and thus not theirs.
Where's his scrotum?
Davis leaves, taking the cat along. Davis rides with two musicians to Chicago, the Ionic beat poet Johnny Five and the jazz musician Roland Turner. During the trip, Davis discloses that his musical partner, Mike Timlin, died by suicide.
Mike Timlin.
Timlin. Mm-hmm. Died by suicide. At a roadside restaurant, Roland collapses from a heroin overdose. The three stop on the side of the highway to rest. When a police officer tells him to move on, he suspects that Johnny is drunk and tells him to get out of the car. Johnny resists and is arrested. Without the keys, Davis abandons the car, leaving the cat and the unconscious Roland behind.
So sad.
I know. It's like, is Roland gonna die?
I know. I know. Also, Roland's played by John Goodman, and he's so funny.
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
You'll find this interesting.
You'll find... This will interest you.
It will not. I guarantee.
I will not be moved by...
I will not be intimidated.
Imitated.
I will not be intimidated.
So funny.
He's like, what you, because you're uneducated, might call the black arts. Okay, buddy. This is like, it's interesting because everyone in this movie, despite not being all that bad, you really do feel the way about them that like Lewin does.
Yeah.
Because you're like, why are they all so annoying?
Yes, and I think this entire movie is very good at being from Lewin's point of view.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously the color story, we were talking about this, it's all very gray and mud tones, which, you know, is very much how Lewin sees the world. He's very depressed, pessimistic.
But, like, everyone, except for the Gorfines.
Yeah.
Everyone is so annoying.
Even Jim, who is so nice.
Who's so nice. And also, literally, Troy Nelson.
Yeah.
So nice, and yet...
So annoying, because you're seeing him from Lewin's
point
of view.
They focus on... they just, like, focus on all the things that are annoying and drag them out.
So what happens next? Are you gonna plug yourself in somewhere or something?
No. I'm not. He's so hurt, too.
I know.
He is so nice. Troy Nelson is, like, the nice guy. He literally is like, well, I'll sleep on the floor.
And you and Lewin can have the couch there.
And then she's like, no. Lewin's sleeping on the floor. And she's so frigid. Okay. So.
You don't listen. You just spout vitriol.
Yeah. It's kind of true.
Yeah.
She's like the only other person in the movie that really actually sucks.
Is as bad as Lewin?
Is as bad as he perceives her.
Yeah.
Like, she gets so mad at him for stuff, and I'm like, you
slept with him, too!
Yeah, you are just as much a part of this as he is.
When he says, it takes two to tango.
And she gets so mad, and then he's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, he gets so bullied by her, too.
Yeah.
Like, he gets gaslit by her.
Yeah.
Like, it's very bizarre. So, anyway. Anyway, he leaves the car.
And the cat.
It's very sad. Mm-hmm. So, Davis, in Chicago, Davis auditions for Bud Grossman, who is the person that signed Troy Nelson.
Yeah.
And he basically goes there to be, like, trying to get signed.
Because he had sent his album there, like, couple months ago, and he like, never heard back. Yeah, so he's going to check in on that.
Yeah, so he goes to see Bud. He auditions for him, and Grossman says Davis is not suited to be a solo performer, but suggests he might fit into a new trio Grossman is forming. David rejects this offer and hitchhikes back to New York City. This is so messed up because I'm like, you just got offered a job!
But there's so many reasons behind why he...
I know.
Like, he's so narcissistic, but he's also so depressed and angry, and he has, like, those issues with working with people because his last partner, his best friend, killed himself, and he hasn't had time to get over it because he's been homeless this entire time.
So messed up. I'm like, buddy. So, driving while the car owner sleeps and distracted by the nighttime lights of nearby Akron, he hits a cat. It slowly limps into the woods as Davis watches.
So sad.
So it's, the cat also looks like the cat he abandoned earlier. So, like, obviously we don't know if it's the same cat.
But there's like, an orange cat in the middle of nowhere on the highway.
Yeah, right by where he abandoned the cat.
An orange cat, yeah.
And he hits it. It doesn't die.
It limps into the woods, so we don't know what happens.
So we don't know if it dies or not. Hopefully not.
Very sad, though. Also, it's so funny that the freaking driver, like, just
hits his head on the dashboard, and he's like, is he dead? He's like, no, he's fine. Back in New York, Davis uses his last $148 for back dues to rejoin the Merchant Marine Union and visits his ailing father.
Why can't I ship out? Because I'm a communist?
It's not that. I don't remember what he says. But
he says like something in Russian, and he's like, "Oh no, you're not."
No, you're not that. I know. I was like, he searches for his seaman's license so he can ship out, but it had been in the box he told his sister to trash. Davis returns to Union Hall to replace it, but cannot afford the $85 fee.
It's so brutal.
Also, it's so funny. It's not funny, but it is. Where he literally just got so mad at his sister, and if he hadn't, he probably could have gone to her and been like, I need $85.
Yes.
And she would have given it to him because she wanted him to go get that job.
Yes.
But because
he got so mad
at her for...
Even though it was his fault,
he got so mad at her that she wasn't going to give him the money.
Though. No, but he could have probably. Probably could have asked, like, I need this and I'll pay you back when I get paid next.
And she would have been like, yeah.
Yeah, I want you to ship out. Like, I want you to
Yeah, that's what she wanted him to do. He visits Jean and she tells him she got him a gig at the Gaslight. Very weird thing for Jean to do.
Very weird, yeah. And she's nice to him.
Yeah, she's very hot and cold. Yes. And also, not only that, but, like, he tells her, like, that he's gonna go ship out.
He's done
with music.
I'm done with folk music, it's too hard, I'm tired, I'm so tired.
And she's like, no, you can't quit.
And he's like, I'm homeless.
Yeah, literally, and she's the one who's, like, always on him about...
And, like, she's like, you can't sleep on our couch every night, that type of stuff.
Yeah, she has this conversation with him pretty early in the movie that I think is very accurate, but is also, like, very harsh. Where she says, like, bad things happen to you because you want them to happen to you.
Yeah.
And, like, you do all of this to yourself, and it's, like, so true.
Yeah, but so harsh. It is harsh. It's, like, a harsh reality.
It's harsh, but it's very true. Like, everything the bad that happens to him, he has bad luck... But it's constantly made worse by his own decisions.
Yes.
And
there are some bad things that happen to him, like circumstances, but it happens to everyone.
But yeah, exactly. But he
just
never get over these, like, tiny little things.
Yeah.
So, at the Gaslight, Davis learns that Poppy, the manager, also had sex with Jean.
So it might not have been his kid.
Which, in my opinion, is, like... This not only means that she lied to him and was just sleeping with him and Jim... We have no idea how many people she's sleeping
with. No, because she said that she just slept with Lewin that once, and that she obviously has sex with Jim.
Yeah, not true.
Not true. She's
so who knows how many guys she's sleeping with?
Yeah.
Literally no one knows.
No one knows.
Could the likelihood of it being his kid is going down less and less. So, he visits... Anyway, Davis drunkenly heckles a woman as she performs on stage and he is thrown out. He goes to the Gorfines' apartment where they graciously welcome him.
So nice.
They're so nice. Then he learns that the novelty song is likely to be a major hit with massive royalties. He is amazed to see that their actual cat, Ulysses, has found his way home. Mm-hmm. So the cat is fine. Not the one he hit, but this one.
Yeah, their actual cat is fine.
In an expanded version of the film's opening, Davis performs at the Gaslight. Poppy teases Davis for heckling the previous evening singer and tells him that a friend of his is waiting in an alley. As he leaves, Davis watches a young Bob Dylan perform. Behind the gaslight, Davis is beaten by the shadowy suited man for having cruelly heckled his wife, the previous night's performer. Davis watches the man as the man leaves in a taxi, bidding him au revoir.
And the cycle continues.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
Basically. This movie, okay. It's such a good look at, like, not only, like, in my opinion, chronic homelessness.
Yes,
and the
very
issues
much so.
That, like,
Pervade homeless people,
but also of, like, obviously, Lewin.
Yeah, just as him as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people know people like Lewin, who, you know, like, just welcome these bad things happening to him.
Yeah, yes. We all know a person who are like, how does bad shit constantly happen to you? Yeah. How? Like, you must be somehow, like, how? I'm sorry, but, like, life just doesn't happen this way.
Yeah.
But, like, it's so true, too, because, like, if we think about it, everything that happens to Lewin, like, he always has to use his money immediately.
Yes.
He can't ever find a place to keep his stuff. Like, all these kinds of things that happen to him. I think specifically the abortion to the merchant license are so...
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, the big part where he's really trying to get it together.
He really is, but then so many unfortunate circumstances, and also his past behavior
comes
back to get him.
Yeah.
And also his homelessness.
And his, prison.
Yeah, and it's just, like, he couldn't hear about that the abortion didn't happen because he was homeless at the time.
Yeah, so he never found out that it didn't happen, so he didn't know he had enough to pay for it.
So he got the money. And he didn't actually...
They didn't take the royalties because he needed the money immediately.
For the abortion.
So he... But, on top of that, he also didn't believe in the song. So it's
so
like,
what,
okay,
he
there's...
taking the royalties anyway?
Like, there's Lewin's, like, personality coming in. He doesn't believe that Jim is talented. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't believe in, like, thinking this thing can succeed.
Yeah.
So he doesn't take the royalties. Then he goes to pay for the abortion. Obviously, he has the credit. And you're like, okay. Then he goes out. He tries to make it in Chicago. He's offered a job. He mm-hmm. turns it down. You find out he basically turns it down because he can't stand to work with anybody.
Yeah.
And then he comes all the way back. He comes all the way back. He's like, okay, I'm going to get this merchant thing. So he pays his dues. He uses all the rest of his royalty money mm-hmm. to pay his dues. Then he's like, oh, I got to go get my license. But the reason he doesn't have his license is because he's homeless. He keeps it with his sister. But
and he told his sister to throw out
He told his sister to throw
out
his stuff. Then he gets mad at his sister for throwing it out, even though it was his decision.
Fault, yeah.
And then now she can't loan him $85, and mm-hmm. he can't replace his license. Then,
so he's just stuck.
Yeah. And then
he can't get a refund.
And then all of this, you find out, Gene...
It might not have been Lewin's kid.
Gene may have lied about all of it in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really shitty.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Especially, like, when you think about this, Gene could have gone... to the owner of the Gaslight.
Yeah!
Who has money.
You own a business. Lewin is homeless. He sleeps on couches.
But here's the thing. She probably feels like Lewin owes her.
Yes, yes.
And on top of that, the Gaslight guy gives her jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably, here's the thing. Probably one of the reasons that she gets him the job at Gaslight is because she feels bad.
And she probably slept with the owner, too.
Again. To get him that
to
job.
To get him that job.
I guarantee. But she probably feels guilty about making him pay the money because she knows that he can't.
Yeah.
So she offers to get him that job so we can make up a little of that money mm-hmm. that he... Because I'm sure Jim told her, oh, he didn't take the royalties.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Also, not only this, but Jim offers to let him tour with them. He doesn't take it.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim's like, you can come with us and tour. And Lewin's like, no.
Doesn't take it. Al offers, like...
to be a part of a trio?
Nope. None of it. Like, he doesn't do any of it. And then on top of all of this, it's like, okay, his partner might kill himself 2 years ago, but because he hasn't had any, like, stability in his life, he hasn't been able to, like... through this at all.
He hasn't been able to process his grief because you can't properly process your emotions until you have your basic food and shelter needs met.
Yeah. And then, like, the only people who come off looking great in this movie...
The Gorfines.
So kind.
They loved Mike a lot, too. And I think it's, like... I think they understand that it's hard for Lewin to be around people who are also friends with Mike.
Yeah.
Just because I think he feels like he's disappointing them, you know?
Yeah, and I also think that a lot of them are, like... They liked Mike.
They liked Mike more, and Lewin was just Mike's friend. And now Lewin is like this little lost puppy.
And now they're like stuck with Lewin because Mike is gone.
Yeah.
It's interesting too because it's like you really wonder like who was Lewin before Mike.
Yeah, that's why I really like this movie because you never see who Lewin is before Mike dies.
And nobody ever talks about it either. Because there's been so much time where this is who he's been, nobody talks about like, oh, you used to be so different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I always wonder, like, how different was he before he killed himself?
I don't know.
Because that can change. That, I mean, being homeless, you don't know if his living arrangements were somehow tied to Mike.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
You really don't know.
It's really interesting, and oh my gosh, the acting is so good.
But it's also interesting, too, because every single favor he gets basically is based on Mike.
Yes.
Even though Mike's been dead for 2 years, basically everyone constantly lets him act the way that he does because they feel bad.
Because his best friend died.
But then also it's like, you guys are making it worse.
You're enabling him.
You're making it worse. Like, by just letting him sleep on your couch and eat your food and lending him money, like, all of that stuff is not helping him. The only person who actively, like talks some fucking sense in him is his sister.
Mm-hmm.
The only person who actively is like, hey, you need to get it together is his sister. That's it. Everyone else, not only that, but I think we really see this with Jean, where they constantly are like, no, don't make good decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's very strange.
And then, I mean, you do have people like Jim who are trying to, like, give him jobs in the field. Yeah. And, like, yes, he's ruining that for himself. But at some point, it's like, look, maybe this isn't for you. Maybe you just don't get to come back. Like Bud Grossman said, maybe you're not good enough as a solo act.
Maybe that's a sad scene where he's like, have you always been a solo act? And he's like, no, I had a partner. And he's like, my advice, get back together. And he said, that's excellent advice.
Yeah, and he literally says, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it makes sense. You are a partner person.
Yeah.
But then it's like
because he is so, like, not that he's not talented, obviously, but he's so good in Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah.
And he learns it so fast.
Yeah.
And, like, but he just can't bring himself to do it.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
It is really sad, but it's like everyone in his life is enabling him so poorly, except for his sister, who he like, I mean, I don't think he's like ruined that relationship with his sister, don't get me wrong. Like,
I mean, their mom's dead and their dad's in a home.
So I don't think he's like, it seems to me like he just didn't, I also think there's a big like him not wanting to end up like their dad, like there is a lot of that, too, where, like, he has clearly some, like, problems with his dad. Like, maybe his dad didn't want him to be a musician.
Yeah, yeah.
And then now he's all, like, you know, like, who's taking care of him? His kids literally are selling his house to take care of him.
Yeah.
Because this is the other thing, too, like, well, he's a part of this union, right? And he's his father was a part of this Merchant Marines.
And they're like, oh, you're his kid?
Yeah, and they're constantly like comparing him. And then, but it's like, well, they're not taking care of him.
Yeah.
And that's what he literally says. He says, he comes back and he goes, good to know what I have waiting for me. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what's left when you're, like, quote unquote normal.
Yeah.
And that's what he doesn't want to happen, but, like, also is, like she says, like, is it really that bad? Is it worse than what you're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a question that Lewin doesn't really know what to do with himself.
When it's sad because he tries, but...
Yeah, and then circumstances just...
I mean, but here's the thing, too. It's not like that's the only ship he could ever work on.
Yeah.
He could save $85 and go back.
Yeah, he could go and play at the Gaslight.
Four times and go get enough money to pay for his thing. He could go to his sister, he could apologize, get that money, but he's not doing that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's the thing, too, is like, Lewin says he wants to change, but like, how much does he want to change? Because it's only $85.
Yeah. How much was that in 1961,
though? I'm sure a lot. If a $200, if an abortion was $200, it's probably like $400 or $500. 1961 was the year.
$732.
Whoo!
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money.
Dang, inflation.
Yeah.
Can you believe our minimum wage is only like $2 higher than it was in 1961?
I can't believe that.
And then, but an $86 thing would now cost $700, but you get paid the same. That's fun.
That's so much fun.
I
have some really cool trivia. There's a lot of trivia over this because there's a lot of really cool folk music Easter eggs.
Yeah.
So the singing voice of Mike Lewin's deceased music partner is Marcus Mumford of the band Mumford & Sons, and actress Carrie Mulligan's husband.
I didn't know that he was married to Carrie Mulligan.
They've been married for a long time.
But I knew that was the guy from Mumford & Sons because I've heard Mumford & Sons, and I know his voice.
You're like, that is Marcus Mumford.
Yep.
But yeah, Carrie Mulligan's husband.
Wow.
Joel Cohen remarked that the film doesn't really have a plot, and that concerned us at one point, and that's why we threw in the cat.
The cat just is like weird symbol.
Yeah.
It's not really much of a plot.
In an interview included on the DVD, Ethan Coen said that the cat was a nightmare. The trainer warned us, and she was right. She said, the dogs like to please you, and the cat only likes to please itself. A cat basically is impossible to train, and we have a ton of footage of cats doing things that we don't want them to do.
Yeah.
The Bud Grossman character, played by F. Murray Abram, is based on Albert Grossman, who ran the Gate of Horn Club in Chicago, and managed acts like Bob Dylan, Peter, Paul and Mary, and Janis Joplin. This is the second Coen Brothers movie with a plot partly inspired by Homer's The Odyssey. When the first one, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, came out, the Coen Brothers told several interviews that they had actually never read The Odyssey. In 2013, they told Terry Gross that they still had not gotten around to reading it.
Buddy, read it.
Read it.
You based two movies on it.
I know, that's what
How
I'm saying.
How can you do that? You didn't
know.
Read it.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
I guess they were like, synopsis.
Let's see. Although there was talk of nominating Please Mr. Kennedy for Best Original Song Oscar, the fact that it was an amalgam of, there was an amalgam of several period songs, novelty, and otherwise meant the Academy had to pass.
What? What does that mean?
I don't know.
You had to pass on nominating that song because they used other songs?
Yeah.
Don't all movies use
other songs?
No. I mean, I guess not. Some movies have completely original scores, but also what?
Oscar Isaac actually strongly dislikes cats. He had once received an infection from a cat bite.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's what you get for disliking cats, Oscar Isaac.
Yeah. The film's title is only seen as the name of Llewyn Davis's solo album in the film. It does not appear at the beginning or end credits.
Yes. Saw that.
This is really interesting. When Bud Grossman suggests to Llewyn Davis that he may have an opening for him in a trio if he trims his beard into a goatee and stays out of the sun, he's referring to the real Albert Grossman putting together and managing Peter, Paul, and Mary trio. Grossman once told to Mary Travers to stay out of the sun and because he envisioned her as a blonde, pale, indoor type. I listened to a ton of Peter, Paul, and Mary growing up.
Wow, he could have been in Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah, like one of the biggest folk trios of all time, yeah.
And
leave it on
no.
a jet plane. let's see. Jim and Jean were actually a real American folk music duo, Jim Glover and Jean Ray, who performed and recorded in 1960s Greenwich Village. As his Ohio State College roommate, Jim Glover was the person who first introduced legendary performer Phil Ochs to folk music. Early on, they were also briefly a duo. Additionally, Jean Ray was noted for being the inspiration for Neil Young's song Cinnamon Girl. Really interesting stuff.
Jean Ray must... Let's look up what she looked like, because I bet she was a cute little girl.
The character of Troy Nelson is based on singer-songwriter Tom Paxton, who served in the Army before beginning his career in Greenwich Village. Paxton's song, The Last Thing on My Mind, is featured in the film, and the Nelson character makes an implicit reference to another Paxton song, Buy a Gun for Your Son.
There she is.
The Coens viewed the music... Oh, wow. The Coens viewed the music as a direct descendant of the music in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou.
She kind of looks like Carrie Mulligan.
She really does. That's
He does not look like Justin Timberlake at all.
Not at all.
He looks more like Oscar Isaac.
Something that I love about this movie is all the music was recorded live, which I really think makes a huge difference.
I do too.
With sound. Only song that was pre-recorded was The Old Triangle. Which is like an off-screen song, but all of the other songs were recorded live.
That's nice.
Which I really enjoy. I think it makes a big difference.
I agree. In the energy.
Casey Affleck, Scott Abbott, Michael Fassbender, Ryan Reynolds, and Connor Oberst auditioned for the role of Llewyn Davis.
And they went, no!
No! Oscar Isaac. See.
None of their eyes were sad enough.
After the cat escapes the Gorfines' home, Llewyn gets into the elevator, and the print on the wall is taken from a famous photo of jazz pioneer Buddy Bolden and his band in New Orleans. When the cat jumps out the window and Llewyn chases after it outside the building, you can hear the line, Pip-it, hear Pip-it, from Jaws in the background.
Ha ha!
Isn't that interesting? Where is it? There was another really interesting one. This is really highly rated critically. It was voted the 11th best film released since 2000 by film critics in a 2016 BBC Culture poll. Trying to find that really funny one that I... Oh, J.M. Barrie, the author of Peter Pan, based Pan off of the boys of the Llewelyn Davies family. This may be Llewelyn Davies' namesake because he shares traits with Peter Pan like irresponsibility and carelessness.
Or
it could be a cool coincidence.
They literally said, LMAO, the boy that never grows up.
Yeah.
The Coen brothers like, no, we've never read Peter Pan or seen it. We don't know anything about it.
So
and
true.
You're like, what?
What?
Peter Pan? Peter, the movie?
The movie? The kids' movie?
You guys are famous directors? You've never... Okay.
This is the only film that year nominated for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy at the Golden Globes, but not the Academy Award.
Of course!
They hate musicals.
And they hate comedies, and they hate anything that's not a super drama.
Yeah. Where was that really? This is so funny. 2 years after Oscar Isaac and Adam Driver sang, "Please, Mr. Kennedy, don't shoot me into outer space," both played major roles in Star Wars Episode 7, produced by Kathleen Kennedy.
Ha ha. That's so funny.
I know. I was like, it's so strange.
I wonder when they got that job, if they were like, that's a funny thing.
Jill Cohen and Ethan Cohen. The first few shots of the scene in the bathroom were filmed as a one-point perspective, the same way Kubrick filmed the memorable meeting between Jack Torrance and Grady in The Shining, also taking place in a bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love this movie. I would give it a 10 out of 10.
Very good. I also give it a 10 out of 10.
It's a great movie.
So sad.
So sad.
Sometimes I often cry and go, why am I crying?
Yes.
I feel like crying, but I couldn't really tell you why.
This was nominated for Best Cinematography and Best Sound Mixing.
But
it didn't win anything.
Didn't think so.
I think it won some Golden Globes, maybe.
Probably. But Golden Globes generally are more reliable.
They are, and also because they separate it by genre.
Yeah. Yeah, which makes sense, because, like, movies are different.
Yes.
So, here we go.
Awesome.
A review.
Oh, wow.
1 out of 10. No sense. According to this film, Llewelyn was a loser. They spelled it looser. Llewelyn. That's how they spelled it.
Llewelyn. It's in the title. You just have to go up and look at the IMDb.
Llewelyn was a loser, and he had a pathetic life. There was no history or evolution on it. He didn't know neither how to talk, neither do you. So he and the people around him just filed their mute condition with bad words for 2 hours. I am not American, and I don't know Llewelyn's songs. They are constantly spelling it Llewelyn. They think his name is Llewelyn. He literally says Llewelyn Davies, and he goes, no, Llewelyn, and then spells it.
What's the N stand for?
This person still goes Llewelyn.
Llewelyn.
Llewelyn's songs. Yes, he sang some in the movie, but nothing great. The film songs were grayed out by the surrounding situations. That's generally how songs that are in the background of movies work.
Yeah.
They generally are not the focus. I went to see this film because it was on our local Big Scream Hour Cine for mothers with babies.
What?
I'm guessing here.
Cinema for mothers with babies?
Yeah, except Cine is what they say, but I'm guessing that must be the word for cinema in their language. Let's look it up. Cine in English. Okay, no, that means who. Cine, a combined meaning from motion picture used in the word, but what's that from? At the cine. Yeah, but like, where? Short for cinema. Cine, yes. Where is that from? I don't know. I guess it is English. I don't know.
Weird.
It sounds like a thing where, like, it's, like, meant for moms with kids to come. You can see movies, and so it's you're allowed to have your kids yell and stuff, is what it sounds like. I like films with a view, with a purpose, with a message. This one didn't have it. If it had, it was about a misery life, which I didn't want to see. I hated this film. I am sorry I paid the ticket to see that. Maria. So she's just mad because it was a character study, which is what 90% of the reviews are mad about.
Are mad that it's a character study? Yeah.
Yeah. This one's like, yeah, I don't know. A lot of them are just like, eh. Let's read this one. I haven't read this one yet. 1 out of 10. I guess P.T. Barnum was right.
What?
I don't know. That's why I clicked on it. After seeing this movie and reading other people's rave reviews, I guess old P.T. had it right. Then again, one man's art is another man's junk. But after sitting on this morass... After sitting this morass, I am more in the junk department. Something about silk purse from a sow's ear. This no start, no end piece of film is supposed to share with us some character development in the early 60s village scene with a mix of folk songs, protest songs, etc., etc. We are allowed to watch a poor me schlup who screws up everything he touches and can't seem to get any traction in his life. The story could have had deeper depth and character movement, but fails in every capacity. The end leaves the viewer with what the hell did I pay for this trash, and we see the Emperor has no clothes, but all the rave reviews are extolling the virtues of this fine brocade and imported skills. My advice, save your money, don't even rent it at the usual places. Somehow the Coen brothers' stock fell just a bit and reminded us that even Babe Ruth strikes out once in a while. I like in IMDb reviews when people use a lot of big words, but they don't use them right or spell them right. It's and you're so like, fun. What are you talking about? You're just trying to sound smart.
You're just throwing out weird words now.
Just use your words that you know, okay? I like when that happens. It's fun.
So this week on Patreon, we'll be doing The Lodge, yes. Which is on Hulu. And then we'll be doing Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Chadwick Boseman's final film.
Yeah.
And it's on Netflix.
Yes.
Awesome, guys. Right. Thank you so much.
Bye.